You're listening to KVMR-FM, Nevada City, and on the phone with me right now is Big John Little. Thanks for joining me this afternoon.
You're welcome, Brian.
Big John, tell me about where you were born.
I was born in a little town called Stanford in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Before they called Niagara Falls, Ontario, it used to be called Drummondville. And my whole family kind of grew up around here, the 19th of November, 1929.
What type of music did you grow up listening to?
Oh, I grew up with mostly country, Brian, because at that time, all the guys from Nashville coming on W. Wheeling in West Virginia and all those things, I used to sit in front of this radio with a broom. And my dad used to say, you're going to knock all the straws out of the broom there, because I used to keep time with the broom, you know. And until I got a little older, then one day I picked up my father's guitar and it was out of tune. He gave me a simple G chord, and the high G and the low G wasn't in tune, so I finally fiddled with the keys until I finally got the high one up to the bass one. And after that, Brian, it just seemed like I stepped in another door and I just had to learn.
So was your dad then a professional musician, or did he just play for...
Yeah, my dad and my uncle, well, he used to play for all the local square dancers and all that kind of stuff, you know, and on the local radio station, CKTB and CHVC, and that's where I got my start, CHVC and CKTB, too.
So when you say you got your start, what was it that you did?
They had a kind of a country jamboree on the local radio station, and they were advertising for different artists to come down and try out for it, you know. So my dad used to tell me, why don't you go down? I couldn't sing at that time. I was just learning to play guitar. So, but I finally started singing. I found stuff by Ernest Tubb was easiest for me to sing because my voice was so deep. So I worked on about a half a dozen tunes up, and I went down and auditioned for it. And they liked what I was doing, and they gave me a job in a regular Saturday Night Jamboree.
So then that was a weekly gig then?
Yeah. We did that, I think, from 1950 to 1953.
So after that was done, where did you go from there?
Elvis Presley was just getting started then. He was doing rock and roll. We were playing these dances, local dances, and the kids started asking for, can you play stuff like Hound Dog and all this kind of stuff? And the other musicians didn't want to learn it. So I told my guys, I said, we better learn that stuff because that stuff's going to hang on to it. So we all start gradually learning Hound Dog and, you know, the Elvis Presley tune, Blue Suede Shoes and all that kind of stuff. And then each dance we played, we start playing a little bit each time and filtering it with our Western music. And we were drawing amazing crowds, and the other guys were dropping off because they wouldn't play the music. So that's what got me into rock and roll.
And what was your first record that you actually recorded in the studio?
I'll Always Love You, yeah. I wrote it for my wife. And then did Rock With Me, Baby.
So those were your first record on the Tri-Fi label out of New York, huh?
Yes.
What can you tell me about the Tri-Fi label or anything about that session?
It was just a little label, Brian, that they were trying different artists out and all that kind of stuff. And when they found you could do a little bit of thing, they'd say, well, okay, we'll do something for you. And they put us on record and all that kind of stuff. And I don't think it really went anywhere, but we had a record and we played it and then we could hear ourselves read it. We thought, wow, that's really great. But it didn't go too far, you know.
So after that record was produced, then what was next for you?
Then I went on the road there. I got it, went into Quebec, and I started learning jazz and ethnic music, polkas and stuff like that, you know. And then I come back, and I went into Niagara Falls, New York, and I started learning blues. And so I started to combine them all together. And that's why I play so many different types of music.
Can you tell me how the Rock and Crickets record came about?
Oh, we were in a Chantant Studios in Buffalo, Brian, and we were waiting for our turn to go on. And they had another group ahead of us, so we were off in the studio by ourselves. So we start experimenting with this tune. Bill Purnell and from Cleveland, Ohio, and Vaughn Jonah from Niagara Falls, Ontario, and Gary Kelber from Port Colborne, Ontario, and myself from Niagara Falls. We're just within an area 12 miles from each other, eh? And so Bill picked up his horn and started going da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and then Vaughn put his hands up on the guitar, and he started doing that with a cricket. We said, oh, wow, this is pretty good. So then Gary, the drummer, come in with it, and we put a beat to it, you know? And we played it through like that. It was full of mistakes and everything else, you know? And somebody heard us out in the old studio. They said, what are you guys playing? Oh, we're just doing a little tune we're putting together like this. Yeah, let's play it. Oh, no, it's not ready. Then, oh, we'll play it. So they recorded it. But full of mistakes and everything else. And then they said, well, we're going to put that out. Never mind. We're not going to record any other stuff. That's it. And they took it and recorded it. And then we were so happy, I guess, to get the doggone thing out and start taking off. We were blind to the business end of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Then we finally woke up to it. And everybody was saying, well, how come you guys aren't getting any royalties from that record going off? And now it's up to 60-something. And he said, no, now it's up to 57, Joe. And we weren't getting no royalties, so we started making a fuss about it. So they took it from us and took our recording and put another band's name on it. And if you listen to the record, you'll hear there's a part where I was doing my solo, and the sax player was doing the solo, and there's a part where I was supposed to change to C, and I was late changing into the C, but the next time it comes around, you'll notice that I do it on time. And both records, both recordings are the same on that, so you can tell that we did the darn thing, and they just took it away from us and said this other band did it. So,
which members were part of the Hot Toddies, do you recall?
Yeah, that was Von Jonah, which he did the cricket. He was an inventor of the cricket, Von Jonah from Niagara Falls. Gary Kelba from Port Coburn, Ontario, he's still alive. Von passed, and Bill Purnell out of Cleveland, Ohio, he's passed. Gary and I are the only originals of the Hot Toddies still living.
What about the flip side, the shaking and stomping? What can you
tell
me that?
About that? We were in the studio one day, and he said, you know any rock and roll? I said, well, I don't know. I did a little thing I wrote here called Shaking and Stomping. So we put it together. I looked at my clock and said, 1:30. Come on, baby, let's have some fun shaking and stomping, you know. Uh-huh. And we started putting a rock and roll beat with it. And we I wrote 2 or 3 other verses with it. And so it took out pretty good because we had a good beat and we had a good sax on it. So it was at the air, it was the right time, you know.
Well, that one also gave you a little bit of label credit, too, because it showed featuring Big John right on the record label.
Yes, yes.
The Hot Toddies, Rock and Crickets, related to the Rock and Rebels. I mean, there's a big, big story on all of that. But what's really interesting here is that they actually released that record again, dropped the Hot Toddies name, and credited it to the Rock and Rebels. What?
Yes, it is the same recording.
Yeah, it's exactly the same. What do you remember when that happened?
Well, we went into the office one time. I think Steve Brody and Phil Tadero, he's dead now. He used to be called Hernandez Hideaway.
Mm-hmm.
He had a program in Buffalo there, and the name was Shan Todd Records. It was Tom Shannon and Phil Tadero. And then Steve Brody was the one that organized all the stuff on it. But we went and talked to him. We said, look, guys, how would you give us some money now? You know, well, it's not copyrighted yet. I said, well, let's copyright it. Oh, well, you wait a while, and then when I come back again, we tried it again, found out that they had copywritten it. So then we couldn't do anything at all like that. So they sent us on the road to promote the darn record. We went all over the damn place with it and kept promoting, doing record hops from Cleveland, Lorain, Columbus, Ohio, Louisville, Kentucky, Binghamton, New York, Ithaca, New York, Messina, New York, and all through this place like that, New York City. The kids were crazy about it because it was a gimmick, eh? But anyways, we didn't even get our traveling expense. We had to take everything out from the bookings we had, you know?
So at that time, your experience with Tom Shannon wasn't so good.
He was a disc jockey, like, you know, and I guess he just went along with the part. I talked to Tom since, and he apologized to me. Sorry something like that happened, you know. And so he's a real honest, down-to-earth guy. I guess it got to him after some time. But somebody made the money. I don't know who got the money, but
you just know who didn't, huh?
Yeah, that's true, right?
Having a record like that that was pretty popular, did you ever have a chance to get onto Bandstand with Dick Clark?
No, we had an offer to go on Bandstand, and Brody was the one handling the, I know he had something to do with the bookings or something to complete with the records. And I know that Dick Clark offered him $50,000 for us to go on, and he wanted $65,000. And Dick said, no, we're not going to pay that. And he said, well, I guess you guys are not going to go on. And at that time, $50,000 was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it wasn't coming to us, but it went to the Brody and them stuff, so I don't know. We didn't see any money. Anyways, I know we lost our share would have been at least $126,000 on it, but we call it excuse me, eh? We have to do more the next time, you know.
Well, there was other records that you made. I'm thinking of something called Lookout and Country Boys Blues.
Yes. I cut that with Metro Records out of Montreal. There was a guy named Roger Miron. He had a record company called Metro, so he put it out for us, and we cut that. That's the time that the twist was going on, so the first one come out was a kind of a twist error. It was a real good tune. Then that thing started selling out all the stores in Quebec, all the department stores was going like crazy, and I went to him and said, look, Roger, what happened? We're selling all kind of records. I can't buy them in the stores. Everybody's making more sales. I said, but how come we're not getting any sales? Well, you know, we haven't got all the statements in yet and all this kind of stuff. You know, it just went on like that for about 2 or 3 months. So I finally talked to a lawyer and got an injunction to stop playing the thing.
You also had another 45 that I'm aware of called Let's Twist It back with Mojo.
Yeah. That's on the Twist album there.
Right. Actually, all four of those sides, I believe, are on the LP.
Yes, they are. They are, yeah.
In fact, you have at least two different versions of that LP.
Yes.
One that was on the Metro label that you just talked about, and another one that came out on Rusticana.
Yeah, that was the same guy. He just changed the label because just to put something different on, you know. And they called us the Beatlers or some damn Beatlers. Beatlers, why Beatlers? I don't know.
That's right. It was Big John and the Beatlers. You're right.
Yeah.
The previous one actually listed you as Big John Little and the Hot Toddies.
Yes.
I guess that would have been more appropriate at the time.
Yes, yes.
Did you make any other records after those?
Yeah, I made a few. In fact, I made some country. Some country records. I did 24 tunes, you know, like tribute CDs. And then I wrote a bunch of stuff to Big John Little, more of his own. And then I have another one called Back to the 50s. And on this one, I have the Crickets. Remember the tune called Nanjadai?
Yeah, right.
Well, Bill and I put that together at Buffalo. And so I put words to it, and it's called now Why Did You Think I Have to Leave You or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's really nice. I got the Cricket in that, too. And it's a good tune.
Now, that was a 45 that you did on the Strand label that had Hoedown as the other song.
Yes, yes, yes. That was the Hoedown. We recut that fellow out of Cleveland, Richard Jordan. He was not too far from Bill Purnell because Bill got sick and he couldn't travel anymore, so I had to pick up another sax player. So Richard Jordan, that's the guy on the album that got his hand stretched out at me and I'm laying on my back there.
Right,
the second
right.
guy in the picture. The first guy is Denny Fox. He's from Buffalo, New York. Heck of a good drummer.
Uh-huh.
And then there was Richard Jordan, and then there was Billy Cardner. He was from New York City. He played bass on that. And I had a French fellow named Pierre Levesque on keyboard from Sherbrooke, Quebec. And that's what we were that the one that's on the album cover.
Mm.
And we went all over, God, Quebec and Ontario and few places in the States with that.
So we're in the early to mid-60s here, and what did you do after some of that recording? Did you go into a different business? Have you stayed with music?
No, I stayed with music, yeah. I started doing a lot of touring then. I went into Quebec I traveled everywhere in Quebec, from Val d'Or down to Gaspé, and I hit all over. If somebody tells me I'm from Quebec, I say, what part? Well, you wouldn't know. A little town called Thetford Mines. I said, oh, yeah, I used to play there at the Belle Morelle. and I taught myself to speak French. I do some recording in French, too. I keep myself busy and travel all around. I haven't been out west yet. I want to go west, I think. If God willing, I think I'm going to try and go out next year. I've never been out that way. I've been all over the United States and Canada, but I'd like to go out west and see what's going on out there.
So now we may have covered this, but did you ever really see a lot of the payola that happened at that time?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. They take our records to the radio stations, but they did it so discreetly. Like, you know, you would never see any cash change hands. You'd see an envelope change hands or something, you know. They'd walk in and say, disc jockey, and they'd say, well, hey, we got this new record coming out. You know, we think it's going to be really, really big. And the guy said, well, how big do you think it is? Well, he says, well, it might sell, 100,000 copies or something like that. So they automatically, the guy knew in the envelope was $100, you know. And you'd give him the envelope, and then a couple of days you start to hear it play. And then if it started getting bigger, people start calling in for it, all that kind of stuff, then the disc jockeys would go back and say, well, I was wrong about that thing. I think it might go 200,000, you know. And the guy find another $200 in his paycheck, you know. But they did it so subtle is what you had to do it if you wanted to get your record played. But back in those days, I guess that's all part of the game, you know?
Yeah.
In fact, Brian, I think it's still going today. You know, if you want a really big hit, it's going to cost you $100,000 or something. Somebody's got to get something to do something, you know?
I suspect so.
Yeah.
Let's just completely switch gears, and I want to talk about some of the things that you're doing now. Specifically, I know that you've got a little website out there, and you've got CDs that you've been recording.
Yeah, I've been doing that. I'm still doing a lot of recording, Ryan. I'm still doing a lot of writing. I wrote everything from country to Latin to rock and roll to blues, and I even wrote some swing things, you know. B.B. King was down to visit me there. Let's see, he was doing a tour, and this guy, Big Joe Burrell, he was another guy out of Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
He played sax for me, and he worked for B.B. King for about 10 years. And then something happened. I guess he got sick, and he had to come off the road. And I met him in Toronto, and he said he was coming to Quebec. He said, I'm going to have a group called the Miller Sisters. So we used to play a lot in Montreal with him in Quebec. We played Rockets Paradise with Oscar Peterson, and Bo Diddley was there, and all the big stars that were before they were big, you know, Mulligan and all of those jazz giants.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is big today. They all was at Rockets Paradise in Montreal in the Esquire Show Bar. So I met a lot of people like that. and it played a lot. So we did a lot of, and we just kept going and keeping in touch and all that kind of stuff. So anyways, finally BB came down, and Joe kept in touch with him, and he called me and said, BB's coming. So I went to meet him, and then we went backstage, and I presented with a plaque, because he was my mentor, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I play a lot of stuff. In fact, I got a guitar like his I call Lucille. And I do a lot of blues and a lot of country and rock and roll. And I like Latin American. I like I do a lot of French and ethnic music, you know, Italian, mm-hmm. stuff like that. I love that.
Well, your latest CD, as I look at your website, which is www.weatherbysound.com/John Little, it's called Big John T-Bone Little. Tell me a little bit about the T-Bone.
Oh,
I got to know that.
Brian, when I was young, I was about 16 years old, I used to, back in those days, they didn't have refrigerators. They just had ice boxes, eh?
Mm.
So we used to pedal ice. We pedal ice all day, and at noon hour, we'd go to a certain restaurant. But that time, they started advertising T-bone steaks, $1.50. Back in those days, you know, things, times kind of tough. You got a steak for $1.50, well, that was really great. So every dinner hour, I'd go to this restaurant. The guy said, what are you going to have? I said, T-bone steak and some jelly donuts. And I did that for every day for about 6 months. The guy said, holy smoke. So one day, we're loading ice in the back of the machine, and this, my next-door neighbors helped me. And he hollers out, he says, T-bone, like that. You know, and I turn around and look. And there were three little kids were going by the school I went to. And they looked and laughed. So the next day, I go to school, and everybody said, there's John Little. The guy said, no, that's not John Little. That's T-Bone. And they laughed. And, you know, it spread like somebody put wildfire through, you know. And every time I go down the street, they say, hey, T-Bone, hi, T-Bone, you know. The first thing you know, so then when I went on the radio, I said, well, I might as well use the name, nickname. So T-Bone the Texans, and that's how it stuck. But I did love those T-bone steaks back in those days.
Well, and the jelly donuts, huh?
The jelly donuts, loved them.
Your latest CD called For You has got some great songs on it. Ride Baby Ride is on there. Hold It, Walking the Dog, Kathy Lynn, Skinny Minnie. You've got some great sounding songs.
Yeah. Walking the Dog, that was a Rufus Thomas tune. I just kind of took a dip off on that. And Kathy Lynn, that's a one about a girl I used to go with when I was in Smith Falls, Ontario. And she was a real beautiful girl, and, you know, I just kind of goofed up, and I let her get away. So I wrote a tune about her, and it came out pretty good. And then Skinny Minnie, when I was on the road there, we did a tour through Cleveland and Columbus at the time with the Rockin' Cricket. I was working with Fabian and Frankie Avalon and Deanna Belmonts and Connie Francis and Dave Baby Cortez, and Little Nasty and the Imperials, and the Platters, and all that. So we started putting some stuff together, and I liked Bill Haley's Skinny Minnie, but I didn't like that. My Skinny Minnie is a crazy chick. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I left that out, and I just put a good funky beat in it, you know?
Okay.
It goes like, my Skinny Minnie is a crazy chick, and I don't put the riff in there. And I go, she's 6 foot tall, one tooth thick, and then she's my baby. She's skinny. No, she ain't skinny. She's just tall. That's all. I think you'll like that one.
Kathy Lynn has nothing to do with the Kathy Lynn and the Playboys group.
No.
I just thought it was an interesting coincidence when I saw that.
Yeah. No, she was a little girl from Smith Falls, Ontario. I was playing there one day, and she come in. In fact, I was trying to date her girlfriend. And her girlfriend said, no, I can't go with you, but I got a girlfriend that I'll introduce you to. So she introduced me to her, and I went with her a while, and I had to travel out of town again, so I let her get away. That's stupid, but I still think about her yet. So one day I was sitting in the bedroom, and I said, Kathy Lynn, I got you on my mind again. And I know, I just can't win, you know?
And a song was born, huh?
Yeah, that sounds good, yeah.
I'm also looking at your CDs. I see one called King of the Country Music, things like My Home Niagara Falls, Camelot.
Yeah, I wrote that one. I used to work on Niagara Falls, and they're building a tunnel from Chippewa, Ontario, into Queenston, Ontario, run from Lake Erie to Lake Ontario, and it all went underground. I used to work underground as a miner, and all the powderman and all dynamiter and concrete, and I did all that kind of stuff. At the time, we lived in Niagara Falls. In wintertime, we used to walk down to the park, and the place would freeze with ice. In fact, the ice got so high one day, it knocked a bridge out. Oh. You probably read about that.
Yeah.
So all those little things about the honeymoons, walking in the park, and all that kind of stuff. So I kind of put it all together and put it down and put the music to it. I had a fiddle player and all that kind of stuff. And so we just, one day, we just sat down in the studio at Ben Weatherby's, and we put it together, and it came out pretty good.
And currently, I think you told me that you're playing all over the place up there, huh?
Yes, yes, I am, Brian. I'm up in southern Ontario, just not too far, within 50-mile radius of Niagara Falls, and then I got a couple more gigs to do, and then I'm going to head back down where I'm staying now in Kingston, New Brunswick, just outside of St. John, New Brunswick.
Well, T-Bone, is there anything else that I may have missed that you'd like to talk about?
No, Brian, other than to thank you for your interest and thank you for your help that you've been giving me in reviving these records and that. And who knows, perhaps one day I'll have something there on record. You'll say, hey, I think we can make a hit of this one. You never know.
You never know.
People are fickle, you know. Sometimes they like this, sometimes they like that, you know. And there's so many different styles and tastes out there, so everybody's got a chance, but you can't give up. You just got to keep going.
Keep going, you bet. Well, T-Bone, thanks so much for spending the time to talk to me and the listeners here in Northern California. We really appreciate
it. Wish them all the best, and God bless them. And no matter what happens, keep their faith in God, because He'll change everything around if you have the faith.
There you go.
And God bless you, Brian.
Thanks again so much, T-Bone, for doing the interview.
Well, thank you very much, Brian.